Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, August 27th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice at the website, whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been gifted. You can also, from that webpage, download the actual tool itself, absolutely free. It's a PDF file. Click on it, download it, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or offered testimonials about how the active use of that tool has improved their life. We hope you do that soon and often. And then if you have comments or questions, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. It'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. This year we're doing the Course in Miracles lessons. Today is the 239th day of the year. And from the workbook in Course in Miracles, it says today's lesson is, "The glory of my Creator is my own." Commentary reads, "Let not the truth about ourselves today be hidden by a false humility. Let us instead be thankful for the gifts our Creator gave us. Can we see in those with whom He shares His glory any trace of sin or guilt? And can it be that we are not among them when He loves His offspring forever and with perfect constancy, knowing He is as He was created? We thank You, Father, for the light that shines forever in us, and we honor it because You share that light with us. We are one, united in this light, and one with You, at peace with all creation and ourselves." Wouldn't that be lovely? And Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment lesson number 239 reads, is titled, "The Bratty Voice inside my head. She quotes Constance Wu as saying, "People who judge you are just not your people." Pam writes, "My brain is a magnificent instrument. It keeps track of where I left my keys. It remembers that 3 times 9 is 27, and it files away lessons on how to drive. But it often acts as my number one nemesis. It chatters incessantly. It categorizes, compares, labels, judges, and defines. That part of my mind gets its jollies perpetuating the idea that life is a problem to be solved. When the heart overfunctions, we get dizzy, lightheaded, and develop heart disease. When cells overfunction, we get cancer. When our brains overfunction, we become slaves to a ridiculous little asshat in our heads that lies through its teeth. That's why, whenever I can, I separate myself from the voice. I observe it. I notice it's back on the treadmill, that it's spinning its fearful little stories. I notice it from a distance, and I just smile." So, wouldn't it be lovely to be able to understand we are one, we are united in the light of creation, and at peace with all creation and ourselves? That would be the goal of all of this work. So we have about 50 minutes left to have conversation. Very short lesson today, a short Course in Miracles experiment. Commentary. And I was talking yesterday in the intro about the similarity of messages and how I watched the hour of or listened to the hour of Byron Katie doing some work with a gentleman who was torturing himself over the thought of getting the vaccine or not getting the vaccine. And I was suggesting that as we approach these different schools and philosophies and spiritual teachings, self-help tools, etc., that it's far more productive, from my personal experience, for me to look through the filter and ask, how are these things similar? Because more and more often, as I look at these deep, powerful works, they're all doing basically the same thing. And then last night in the support group, we listened to, or we watched an hour of, it was a Guy Finley talk from Wednesday. And minutes before he began that talk, he came up with another special writing. He usually has a special writing for each talk. Some he has prepared days and weeks in advance. And then sometimes he's getting ready for the talk and he gets this flash of insight and has another special writing. So he has the initial special writing, he begins the talk, and not too long into it, he pulls up another special writing. Almost as though he'd been listening into our show yesterday. His special writing is as follows. He says, "We believe action is more important than awareness. For us, quote, get it done, close quotes, means for the most part to do whatever we must to deal with the fear that arises in us that some impending imagined loss is approaching." He says, "But when we take action without awareness and without awareness of what initiates that negative emotion, any form of struggle, it's absolutely reckless at best and often even worse. Because when we act from that fear or that negative emotion without understanding its roots, the useless suffering it creates for us and others is completely unnecessary. But when we act without awareness of what initiates the negative emotion within us, it's reckless at best and often worse because of the useless suffering it creates for all who are impacted by our conflict-filled choices and the widespread rippling effect. The widespread rippling negative effect of us taking an action from a negative emotional state. And as we've talked about so often in the intros and in depth in this work, the presence of a negative emotion is best used by me as a braking system, as a timeout, as a warning, as an indication that my lights are out, that I'm not seeing things clearly. And the most useful application of a negative emotional state within me is to use it as the motivation to pause my actions and thoughts, take a breath or two to calm my physical system down, and turn the focus inside myself and ask myself, how am I creating this negative emotion? Or alternatively, ask myself, what am I making this situation mean? What's the negative interpretation I'm throwing on this life situation? And when I have that awareness and I see the root and the cause of my negative emotional state, that's when it begins to lose its power over me, and that's when my awareness expands and I'm far more likely to be able to do something that's beneficial to myself and everyone else in that moment. So again, the more we can step into looking for the similarities, my experience has been the better it is for me, for my learning, for my moving forward in life. And it's amazing to me. We were talking last night in the support group about G.P. Walsh. And G.P. Walsh has a technique he calls inner reconciliation. And inner reconciliation, to my eye and ear, is almost exactly the same as Byron Katie's questions. It's almost exactly the same as the work that Guy Finley calls us to do. It's almost exactly the same as, in its core, as doing reality management worksheets anytime I'm upset and choosing to dismantle my upset and therefore hopefully restore a clear, accurate perception of actuality prior to making a decision about what to do, prior to choosing my next action. And so if you go to G.P. Walsh's YouTube channel, he's got a new, I guess it's an hour and a half video of him actively working with people. Yeah, it's a little over an hour and a half. Doing his process of inner reconciliation, where there is an inquiry stage, and then an invitation stage, and then an integration stage. And it's all simply about self-exploration. It's not about self-help. It's not about changing myself. It's very much like Byron Katie's work, questioning. Questioning what? Questioning myself. Understanding at deeper levels what the mechanisms are that create the reactions and responses that I have to life as it flows around me. So if you're interested, You're looking for yet another slightly different approach, another very well-informed, very gentle approach. G.P. Walsh on YouTube. And when you go to his channel, there's an hour and 36 minutes that he's doing with another young man through a Zoom. And it's an example of working with people live who call in and say, look, here's the issue I'm having. And then he steps through his inquiry, invitation, and integration phases. So the big hope that I have for all of us is to further our work, our understanding of ourselves, our ability to see how we create and then foster the suffering that we experience. Because as I see that that's happening, it stops happening. As I'm in my life and I believe people and things outside of me are creating my suffering, there's nothing I can do to stop it. But when I find a tool, a process, a position, an inquiry that helps me understand how I'm actively creating my pain and suffering, that insight, that clarity leads to the direct instantaneous resolution. Like Guy Finley says, the brain doesn't fix itself, and it only stops its chattering, its monkey mind, its hamster on the wheel approach to life. It only stops when it realizes, when it comes to the realization that it is the source of its pain, not the solution to its pain. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. This is a Friday, so hear ye, hear ye. Get your comments or questions in early because we're going to be gone for the next few days in our weekend. I was talking about the book Difficult Conversations, How to Discuss What Matters Most. And they talk about three types of conversations. One type of conversation is the what happened conversation. And the challenge in the what happened conversation is that the situation is more complex than either person can see. And then another type of conversation is a feeling conversation. And the challenge here is that the situation is emotionally charged for one or both participants. And the third kind of conversation is the identity conversation. And the challenge there is that the situation threatens our sense of identity. So, in each of these types of conversations, they highlight how there's a pattern that can be just a battle of messages or a learning conversation. For the what happened conversation, the battle of messages is based in an assumption. The assumption here is, I know all I need to know to understand what happened. And my goal is to persuade the other person that I'm right. To turn that into a learning conversation, I have to change into a different assumption. I have to try an assumption like each of us is bringing different information and perceptions to the table, and there are likely to be important things that each of us does not know. In which case, the goal is to explore each other's stories and figure out how we understand the situation from our individual perspectives and why. This reminds me of the formulation I got from listening to, you know, dozens of Guy Finley lectures, and adding it to some things I learned from Michael Rice and somebody else. And so the idea is that in order to learn anything new, I've got to be willing to approach it, especially if it's something complex or has much depth to it. I've got to be willing to approach it over and over again, but I must also approach it with the observation number one, I don't know everything in the world, clearly. Well, direct observation from that is, if I don't know everything, then whatever it is I think I know, partially true, and potentially completely false. So if I make these active observations as I approach a situation, I create the circumstances necessary for learning. I create a possibility, an atmosphere for learning. But if I approach a situation thinking, I know what I know, and I know how I know it, where I learned it, and it's rock solid, I'm going to leave that situation knowing what I knew. I can't learn anything new. And if it's a really deep subject, I must be willing to approach it over and over again with the direct observation that since I don't know everything, whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true and perhaps completely false. Another assumption in the battle of messages from the type of conversation titled What Happened is, I know what this other person intended. And my goal in that battle of messages is to let them know that what they did was wrong and what they intended was wrong. But to turn that into a learning conversation, I need a whole different assumption. So I need the assumption that I know what I intended, and I know what the impact of their actions was on me. At the same time, I don't and can't know what the other person intended and or what the impact of my statements and actions was on them. So then the goal becomes to share the impact on me and find out the impact on them, find out what they were thinking, find out what my actions and words resonated in them and how they landed, and share with them how their actions and words landed in me and what it resonated in me. Again, it's an invitation to learning when I make the direct observation that I don't know everything. And once I know, once I admit, once I step into the direct observation that I don't know everything, it's the next step of observation is, okay, then whatever it is I think I know must be, by definition, only partially true and perhaps even completely false. Now, for most of us, this is one of the toughest things about this work, and we mention it on a regular basis. Dr. Michael Rice's worksheet has it written on there in a couple of different places. I need to be willing to cancel my need to be right, my sense of urgency, my obsession to be right. I need to release it and cancel it. I need to withdraw my mind energy from the identification with the need to be right. If I can't do that, I can't be open to learning anything new. There's this whole observation in this book, Difficult Conversations, How to Discuss What Matters Most, this understanding of mutuality, understanding that we're all in this together. And just like the other person can't completely know the impact on me or within me of things they say and do, I can't know what's getting resonated in the other person based on things I might say or do. We're really in this together. The last set of assumptions for the type of conversation called what happened conversation is the assumption that it's all the other person's fault. Well, it's just as unproductive to say it's all my fault. Depending upon which of those two I pick, the goal is to get the other person to admit and take blame for this situation and get them to take full responsibility for fixing it. Or alternatively, if I've decided I'm the one that's all to blame, dump all that responsibility on me. The way to turn it into a learning conversation is to assume that we have both contributed to this interaction that's become messy, that's become unproductive. And the goal is then to understand the contribution of the system, my contribution to the system, their contribution to the system, and how our actions are interacting to produce what we're experiencing. Now, in order to get there, in each one of these, I've got to cancel my need to be right. I've got to begin to become aware of how strong a sense of urgency has been generated in me around the thought of I need to be right. Some of us have to do a whole stack after stack of worksheets on this letting go of the need to be right. In part because in the family situation we grew up in or in our early, you know, formative relationships, many of us have had the experience of being punished at the same time we're being told that we're being punished because we were wrong. And so in our minds, we've got this false belief that if we don't fight to our last breath to prove that we're right and the world or the people around us are wrong, that we're going to continually get punished. And the punishments are just going to escalate until we end up obliterated. So one of the toughest things about this work is to develop and then strengthen the willingness to cancel my need to be right, to step into the realization that there's nothing of value that can be taken from me and nothing of value that can be added unto me. And as such, I'm not vulnerable. In truth, at my essence, at my core, moving through life, emotionally speaking, I'm not vulnerable. I've got a lot of beliefs that I'm vulnerable. I've got a lot of beliefs that the people and things outside of me are causing my pain, my fear, and my sadness. But just because I believe it doesn't mean it's true. So the core of this work, Way of Mastery, Course in Miracles, Guy Finley's work, is, you know, one big part of it is to wake up and realize you remain as the Creator created you to be, which is whole and complete and having value because of your very existence. And then at a deeper level, understanding that when you experience the suffering that most of us do, it's an inside job. That the training we've had that makes us focus on the outside world and attribute responsibility for our pain and fear and sadness to the outside world is not accurate. It's a trap. It's the blame game. And it's completely misleading, and it leaves us focused on things that we have no control over, and it continues to nurture our sense of being helpless and hopeless. At the same time, it leaves us feeling that we are to blame. So it's a trap, it's a mess, and it's not true. It's based in a lie. So a lot of times, there's even in the Course in Miracles, there's a lot of wording about your vulnerability and your invulnerability. And one of the suggestions I use for sidestepping that trap is, instead of talking about being vulnerable, just talk about being open. A lot of people say, oh, that was so vulnerable of you to share that. And I'm getting a lot of mileage out of taking that whole concept out of my vocabulary. I don't think about making myself vulnerable, because that assumes I can be hurt. But at the same time, I want to talk about the process of sharing. So I openly share what's going on with me. And that's the same. I'm using the same message. That's a descriptor without the negative connotation of this vulnerability that I can be hurt. I will openly tell you, I wish, you know, I could give you a hug right now. I feel sadness coming up in me as I resonate with your story, and I'm remembering and I'm having tears come up as I think about times in my life where I've felt the way you seem to be feeling now. So instead of saying I'm going to be vulnerable and share my feelings, I say I'm being open and sharing my feelings. Because in truth, when I share my feelings, I'm as safe as the moment I was created. And I'm as safe as the moment and the next moment and the next moment. And there's nothing that can change my core. There's nothing that can be taken from me that's of value. There's nothing that can be added unto me that's of value. And so from that perspective, from that depth of spiritual teaching, it is completely inaccurate to say that I'm vulnerable when I share my feelings openly. So I hope that makes some sense. I'll get back to the Difficult Conversations book here in a minute, but I just seemingly stumbled across that. One of the key things that's really helped take my work to the next level in the past few years is understanding that I can pretty much eliminate the word vulnerable and vulnerability and invulnerable and invulnerability from my vocabulary. And how can I do that? Well, instead of saying I was a victim of this or that, I can say I experienced this or that. Instead of saying I'm making myself vulnerable, I just say I'm being very open right now. And it's not because, you know, when I choose to be closed, it's not because I'm doing it from fear. It's because I'm choosing a measure of privacy. I'm not trying to deny these experiences or emotions or reactions within me. I'm choosing who I'm going to share them with. So I eliminate words like victim as much as I can from my thought process and vocabulary. And I eliminate words like vulnerable and vulnerability from my vocabulary and thought process. And it's really made a difference in my internal experience of self and safety and strength and solidity. So we have 22, 23, 24 minutes left. plenty of time for a conversation. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. Speaking of conversations, here's a book, Difficult Conversations, How to Discuss What Matters Most. It's from the Harvard Negotiation Project. And the second category of conversations are the feeling conversations. And they talk about how, again, the challenge in the feeling conversation is that the situation is emotionally charged for either one or both of us. And when we set up these battle messages, we have assumptions like feelings are irrelevant and wouldn't be helpful to share, or my feelings are the fault of this other person and what they did, and they need to hear about it and they need to change. The goal is I either avoid talking about my feelings or I approach the other person and blast them with my feelings. And the way to turn that situation into a learning conversation is to start with a different assumption. And the assumption here is that feelings in this kind of conversation are the heart of this situation. And feelings are usually complex. I may have to dig in a bit to understand my own feelings. And the goal is to address feelings, both mine and the other person's, in acceptance and allowance, to acknowledge feelings and help them move to resolution before jumping into problem solving, which is very much in line with what we work on here in the Mindshifters radio and support groups. When my strong emotions are up, they distort my perception. So to dramatically increase the chances of a productive resolution, I want to avoid trying to problem solve or move forward until after I have dismantled my intense negative emotions and at least offered to support the other in doing the same. The third kind of conversation is the identity conversation. And the challenge there is that in one way or another, we have come to believe that this situation threatens our identity. The battle of messages, assumptions in that kind of conversation are, I'm competent or I'm incompetent. I'm the good one or I'm the bad one. I'm lovable or I'm unlovable, and there's no in-between. My identity is wrapped up in being all right or all wrong, all good or all bad, all lovable or completely unlovable. And whenever that arises in the battle of messages approach, the goal becomes to protect whatever my image is. And when I'm doing that and the other person's doing that, we end up in a battle. We end up in an unproductive interaction, not a productive conversation. The learning conversation format would start with the assumption that while there may be a lot at stake psychologically for both of us, each of us is complex and neither of us is perfect. So the goal becomes to understand the identity issues that are on the line for each of us and help each other build a more complex self-image that's more flexible and helps us maintain balance and a modicum of flexibility and objectivity. So there's the beginning of the book. There's the chart that breaks down the three typical types of difficult conversations that this Harvard Negotiation Project book is going to help us step through. So, what are your thoughts? What are your comments or questions? What would it take for you to quit arguing about who's right and who's wrong and step into exploring each other's stories? with allowance and surrender. Call that number, press 1. Help us determine how to spend the next 17 or 18 minutes before we move into the second hour of today's two-hour Mind Shifter Radio. What's on your mind? I think I should mention that we had a group member from our Tuesday and Thursday support groups who's undergoing quite a bit of, in her words, drama and trauma. So if you've got any extra energy for positive thoughts and prayers and holding someone in a space of love, this person is getting financial challenges, physical challenges. Would love your loving energy directed in her general vicinity. Keep her in your thoughts and prayers. And some people say, well, you know, I need a name, or I need an image, let's just keep it at this. It's a group member who has access to these tools and has been with us on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Hold the image of one of those gentle, loving people having significant physical distress and needing a surgery, and send some loving thoughts that way. I had a session with somebody earlier that was focused on how blind we can become to the negativity in an interaction pattern. I'm changing from the word relationship to interaction pattern, because I don't really think there's much relationship happening once it turns negative. And the issue is how blind we can become to these negative patterns in our lives. And she was talking about having a challenge, having to do something she'd never done before, and calling her estranged partner to see if he could, you know, step her through it. And he ended up, you know, she was getting frustrated and said, maybe I should just pay the money and have somebody else do this. And he said to her, what are you, retarded? What are you, stupid? And that insult, that pulling back from the engagement of being in the middle of an interaction with someone that you're supposed to care about and be helping, can become so second nature, so ingrained, that we don't even notice it. We just say, oh, they were just kidding, or oh, they're using sarcasm, or oh, that's just their way of, you know, trying to get me to think that I'm plenty smart enough to do this. But it contains such bitterness, such negativity, such insult. And it can only come from the space of such woundedness that it's really, really useful to notice it when it occurs and take corrective action and make the commitment to change that pattern and or limit your interaction with someone who won't change that, they're part of that kind of a pattern. You know, it is just not productive in any way to call somebody stupid. It's not productive in any way to insult someone. Just like we're talking about in the core of this work. It's not productive for me to say or do anything when I'm coming from the space of anger or fear or sadness. In order to have any modicum of possibility of success, I need to stop before I speak or act and dismantle the pain or fear or sadness within me or the negative emotional state within me. And I have been working diligently with patients for decades now, trying to help them see that the price they pay when they stay in those negative interactions far outweighs the benefits they think they're getting. Like in this case, the woman was saying, yeah, it would probably cost me $150 to have somebody come out to the house and, you know, jumpstart the car or whatever, change the tire or fix the washing machine. So it's worth it for me to save that money to call my abusive ex because, you know, he was a dishwasher repairman, so he knows all about these things, or he's a mechanic, or he's changed dozens of tires. And it is quite the challenge for me in working with people to help them slow down and observe for themselves, what are the hidden costs? Yeah, it doesn't take $150 out of your checking account to call your abusive ex and let him or her step you through this while they're being abusive. And yet there is a cost. There is a cost in resonating and reinforcing the negative beliefs you have that you hold about yourself. There is a cost in terms of the negative emotional energy that you'll have to live with and or find a way to disperse over the next days or weeks. There is a cost in terms of the reinforcing of the negative belief patterns that have been there for sometimes decades. And the longer I stay in an abusive pattern, being subjected to and being, you know, using whatever I think are my coping mechanisms to try and, you know, fight off the negativity, that's a cost. And for a lot of us, there's a hidden cost because we are modeling for people what we think is an acceptable interaction pattern in relationship, especially if we have children. We're modeling for our children how they should let themselves be treated and how they should treat others. So it is very useful to develop skills like the reality management worksheet and dismantle the upset before I move forward, to figure out ways to have difficult conversations while we're staying respectful and compassionate. And it's very useful to be able to do the, some would call it a psychological autopsy or the psychological review of an interaction when it has gone sideways and when I'm feeling upset, and make a choice, not just decide automatically to keep the interaction pattern going, but make a choice to change my part of the interaction, which in some cases is going to mean I don't keep calling my abusive ex asking for support or help to avoid having to pay to have the tire changed or the dishwasher fixed. That I either find a different source of support or teaching or coaching that isn't going to be abusive, or I pay the money to have somebody else do it. I advocate on a regular basis for people to be more gentle with themselves, and often that includes changing interaction patterns with people in their lives that they experience as being abusive. I advocate that people actively go inside themselves, and with this patient I had earlier today, I advocated for her to go do some worksheets about what got stirred up in her when her partner called her stupid. And, you know, there's a part of her that wants to say, well, I don't need to do that because I know I'm not stupid. And there's a part of her that became enraged when her partner used that phrase. So in this work, I know that if I become enraged when someone says something, it's because it's resonating something that's already in me. And I've got the tools to go in and do the excavation and get rid of that part of me that actually is hurt by the thought that somebody else is hurt enough to call me stupid. Because there's a part of me, when that happens, that isn't so sure. Am I stupid? Maybe I am stupid. And resonating all of the pain and fear and sadness from a younger time in my life where I actually thought I was stupid. Or I was subjected to traumas and abuse that were paired with being called stupid. And the good news is that energy, those experiences of those emotions, those false beliefs are located in my system. And I can use these tools and dismantle them. I could use Byron Katie's set of questions and explore and dismantle them. I could use G.P. Walsh's system of I forget the name of it right now, but it's inquire, invite, and integrate. I could use a whole series of reality management worksheets, or I could use the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter tool and start to explore all of the hidden thoughts and energies in me around believing I'm stupid, fearing that I'm stupid, fearing that other people might think I'm stupid, and I can start to dismantle those energies. So there's simply less of them to be resonated in me the next time a loved one, a family member, a stranger resonates those energies. So, 563-999-3581. Somebody sent me a text message that says, willingness takes courage. You know, I love that comment because what we're making here is the assumption that it's the same for us as it is for everyone else, and it isn't. So here's my commentary on that. I've had times where people say, oh my gosh, you're so brave. Oh my gosh, it's so courageous of you to be in this way, vulnerable, right, or to be so open. And while there have been some situations that resonated such fear in me that I did need a considerable amount of courage to move through them. If I don't have fear about it, it doesn't really take courage for me to do something. I hope that makes sense, right? So that if it's as easy for me to talk about my feelings as it is to take the next breath, it doesn't really take courage. And yet for somebody else, they might have a tremendous amount of fear about sharing their feelings. And then it would be a very courageous thing for them to share in the face of their fear. Welcome, Susan.
Hey, I wasn't going to talk, but I've been thinking about something that happened yesterday, and if it doesn't take courage, then it isn't even an issue. That's what I'm thinking of now. I mean, I wouldn't have, I'm just jumping in. I wouldn't have any kind of, if I didn't have upset, then it wouldn't be an issue. The upset comes from being afraid, but then I know afraid,
right.
Is, that's
fear.
My big filter. Yeah, that's my big filter thing. I mean, lack of the right kind of filter, and my fear filter is well in place most of the time. So, yeah. So I don't know even, I can't feel my way into what you just said, because anything I would want to bring up, anything I would feel upset about, I would be upset about it because I was afraid on some level of being wrong, being not being annihilated, the whole thing. So.
Well, the only point I was making is that if I'm not afraid, then it doesn't take courage to do the thing.
But then it wouldn't need to be brought up at all.
I would just do the thing, right? I would just do the thing. I can be open. I can talk about my emotions. I can, you know, cry the tears. I can share my worksheets on the internet show. And if I don't have fear about doing that, it doesn't take courage to do it.
Well, I see.
Right? If I've moved to the place of understanding that I will benefit from this, and maybe others will as well, but I'll benefit from doing the sharing. I'll understand it more deeply by the time I'm done explaining this worksheet, or by, you know, I'll engage the people I want to engage more when I verbalize about my emotions. And I feel that, and there's no fear, then it doesn't take courage to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If I have all of that and I have fear come up in me, then it takes courage to do it anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
But the thing I'm trying to point out here is that for some people, it's as easy as falling off a log to share openly and talk about their emotions, etc. Just like for some people, it's nothing to it to change a tire or to jump a car or... But for other people, changing a tire or, you know, jumping a car battery seems dangerous and scary. And so the point I'm trying to make is it's my subjective experience about it that makes it either scary or a brave thing to do. It's not, you know, that this thing is always going to take courage or thing is always going to be scary.
Got it.
And we've all got things that, you know, would be more difficult for us to do than others. You know,
right.
No one does everything seamlessly, flawlessly, without fear. Everybody has pockets in their skill sets and in their life experiences that they're better at than others. And not as good at than others in their own.
Right. Yeah.
Repertoire. So, thank you for that comment. Thank you for that chance to explore that again. I just, I'm glad when I share something and people say, "Wow, I really appreciate that." And I'm glad that they appreciate it. I'm glad it was useful for them. I share it because it's useful for me. And then when they say, "Oh boy, that's really brave of you," I say, "Well, essentially what's happening there is it's probably something that you would have needed to be very brave about, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I had to have bravery to do that."
Got it.
All right. So thank you so much for the call and the comments. It's always a delight to hear from you. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I'll mute you so you can be on for the second hour. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, second half team.
Hi, Dr. Tim, it's Michelle.
Great way to say it, Tim.
Hello. Hello, Michelle. Yeah, I never know whose phone number is what anymore these days. So
I understand.
Welcome, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I'm Michelle Passe here. I'm filling in for Jeannie on August 27th, 2021. Hi, Michael.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome, and thank you for being available. What's on your mind
today?
Yeah.
Oh, what's on my mind today?
What kind of exciting things have been happening in your world?
Well, I got divorced this week.
Congratulations. It's been a long haul. How are you doing with that?
Well, I was a little surprised that there was as much as reactivity as I was having. And I think it's, you know, the finality of it. This divorce was unwanted, as you know, and really until the ink's dry, anything's possible. And so the ending of that is difficult. I spent a couple hours with Rex earlier this week to kind of move through letting go some remnants. There's, you know, shreds. And I had texted him because I said, yeah, I signed the papers, but the PAGRA lives strong. Right? You know how people will say, well, I don't need a piece of paper to, you know, be married and no show my love. Well, I don't need a divorce to tell me that, you know, I'm still not connected. I'm not connected to you because I am, and deeply, and I recognize that. But it's an attachment that, like, I mean, I can even hear my tone that it's more peaceful, releasing detachment than like sort of a gnashing sadness. A lot of the grief is gone. And like grief happens.
But what's this?
Know,
this is
come up.
Yeah,
it's
been
up.
about a 5-year divorce, right?
You got it.
So you've
you
done
walked out
a
on
a lot of work.
The weekend, Jeannie was at my house. That we had the Healing the Whole Woman seminar, September like 16, 17, 18, or some about. In 2016, and all the women came to my house, and he vacated as we agreed upon, so that we could all have the privacy and healing. And he went to his mom's to stay for the long weekend, and he never came home. Then I invited you the next year to try to clean up some of the mess, and he still never came home. But certainly that was a great another, you know, the following year in 2017, that fall, with you and Ari, and spending a month here in October doing healing work. And lots of helpers in between, right? Julie Haverstick, one of the sessions where she was, you know, tithing to, you know, be of service to people, and did work with her, did my support groups, did all kinds of work. And here we are at the
end.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, I'll touch this one. What?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to tell you
something
interesting. Okay, about with Mark. He had another Crohn's surgery this spring, I think, and he was, you know, sick again, and then now recovering. And most recently, I heard that Alyssa told me, and my daughter told me he had a hernia. And so, of course, I looked it up, and it says ruptured relationships, strains, burdens, incorrect creative expression. I'm like, huh, body is not lying. Ruptured relationships, So he created that hernia since he's been gone.
So have you done the exercise? And it's interesting, we brought up that conversation about what hernias meant was in yesterday's show. So it's interesting you bring that up again today. But have you done the, remember the emotional release technique that we do for letting go of attachments? Have you done that?
Refresh my memory because it's not coming to mind.
So it's where you focus where the two pencil tips of light would meet and ask Orca to assist in letting go of emotional attachments.
Okay, so is it something we can, like, I can do right now? Like, everybody who's
Absolutely.
Listening could, like, play
Absolutely.
Along and we could all sit together?
Everyone in the audience who wants to have some emotional attachments, things that keep cycles of emotions going, is welcome
okay.
to do it. It only takes a minute, and it's profoundly powerful.
Okay, so, Michael, I'm going to invite area code 828-484-847-917-417-901-248-517-517. I want to invite you all to join us in this collective healing exercise because all of us, I'm certain, have things that we need to let go. I know I do. And so thank you, Michael. And let's begin.
Okay. Well, we're going to start out. And obviously you're going to do it with Mark, but anyone else who wants to do it, pick out a person where you realize there's some emotionally recurring patterns that perhaps interrupt the relationship. And think about that person. And we'll just give you a moment to get someone in mind. Get a picture of them.
I did. That's exactly what I did. I hopped up in my office and went to the table and I got one of our photographs that we look so amazing.
Cool. And breathe. And then I'm going to ask you to imagine that I have two pencils made of light, two light beams. And what we want to do is use those light beams to help you to locate your awareness in what we're going to refer to as the seat of the unconscious, the place where you can let go of those emotional attachments. And so I'm going to ask each of you to imagine that I have a beam of light that I'm bringing right down to the very top center of your head, the very top of your crown, and inserting it into your cranium. And then a second light beam that goes right in the center of your forehead, right through your third eye, what we call the third eye. And I'm going to just ask you to focus yourself where those two beams of light would meet. And when you're there, Michelle, let me know.
I'm ready.
Okay. And now bring a picture of that person to mind while you're focused in that spot. And when you're there, let me know.
I'm there.
Okay. And so I'm going to give just a few seconds for anyone else that's doing the exercise to get yourself, your awareness located in that spot where the two tips of light meet. And you've got to picture that person you're going to release emotional attachments with. And then I'm going to ask you to ask Rooka for assistance and repeat or speak out loud with full intention. Rooka, I release all attachment to, and then speak that person's name.
Sorry, I was on mute because I'm crying, so I'm just kind of like
breathing with you.
I said it. I'll say it again. Rooka, I invite you to assist me to support me in releasing all my attachments from Mark.
And breathe. And are you noticing anything in your head or in your hands?
Not really.
And you might repeat once more. Brooke, I release all attachment to Mark.
Brooke, I release all attachment to Mark. I don't know. I don't really notice anything significant. It makes me wonder if there's part of me unconsciously that doesn't want to let go.
Well, I'd say there's a good chance, but I'll feed back and you can go back and listen to the show. And what I notice is that your voice, the frequency, the energy of your voice has totally changed from just seconds ago to now.
Well, I was crying.
Okay.
I looked at a picture and you're talking about the instructions and all the things, and I'm just like, it brought up like all this grief and just like, no. it just feels like so unnecessary.
Well, it's not unnecessary. Actually, it's totally and completely necessary because it's in you. You're not experiencing grief because you're divorcing Mark or Mark left or the relationship is over. You're experiencing grief because there's grief in you.
No, I was saying it's unnecessary that he couldn't stay. It's unnecessary that you, to be unconscious.
Yeah. So would you like to process more around that?
It just feels like I'm still judging the lack of willingness that he gave to the commitment. Like after 19 years of our relationship and the commitment to blend the families, it just felt that a bigger level of sacrifice, like to work through whatever it is that you like had in the way of showing up.
So do you remember ever having done the worksheet from codependence to interdependence?
The advice worksheet?
Mm-hmm. That's the one.
I'm aware of that.
Okay. So if you look at your advice to him, and then you realize that if you're relating to him as a body, you're relating to a picture generated by your brain, a perceptual construct that comes from the content of your mind. And so if that body that you call Mark, what you think is Mark, the picture in your brain, which isn't Mark at all, it's a construct you have out of your mind energy that you project into your brain's image of Mark, but in no way, shape, or form is it Mark, then the advice you're giving to what you think is that man out there is really advice to a part of your own brain that generates this image that you think needs that advice. So what's your specific advice to him?
Miko, I am quite aware that sooner or later we must all accept the fact that that in relationship, the only person that I'm dealing with is myself. I get that.
I'm not sure that's true, but I'm heading toward a different point than that.
What's my advice? I don't know. I have a hard time generating something because it feels so dead-ended. I've like trying to get him to change or do anything. It's just
Michelle.
What?
No. Michelle, the objective here has nothing to do with Mark. The individual human being called Mark right now. Nothing.
But then why am I giving advice to him? Then there wouldn't be a point to give him advice if he's not a body.
Okay. So take a breath. Notice once again that you have a picture in your mind of a body that you call Mark. And my offering is that that picture in your mind is a construct of your mind that comes from the content of your mind. It is not Mark. It never has been Mark. It never will be Mark. It's got nothing to do with Mark, except Mark is the one who can resonate those parts of your mind. So that picture that you call Mark, that body, that perceptual construct in your mind, comes from the content of your mind. You're giving that advice to yourself via this construct that you call Mark. So I'm asking you to look at specifically what your advice is to that picture in your mind. Nothing whatsoever to do with Mark right now.
I know, it's advice that I need to take myself.
So what's the advice? Keep your breath moving. We're here just holding the space.
Michael, I'm like blanking. It's like in a way that I don't. I mean, I'm trying to. I keep going through different things, ideas, but then I just reject them because they don't really fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, if you go back and listen, you languaged that advice just a few minutes ago.
Okay, then remind me. His willingness.
So it isn't going to be the exact words because that was, you know, a long time ago and I didn't memorize them. But in essence, your message to him sounded like it was, you need to be in integrity with your family and your commitment to me.
Okay. That's good advice.
Does that fit?
Yeah,
that's circumstance?
Good.
Okay.
Right.
So is there anywhere that you've ever been out of integrity with your family or your commitment to them? So my offering would be that that's the next place for your forgiveness work, to start looking at the places where you've done that, and it's time for you to clean that up, whether it's with him or your kids or the person you look at in the mirror, or your mom, or your dad, or your sister, or your brother, or your son. That would be, I would offer you,
Michael, the
place
reason,
for you to go.
Okay, so the reason I'm in this divorce is because I started that process in 2013, and I kind of got into a different vibration, and we're not matching bags of garbage. That's why I'm kind of here, because I did take responsibility for my way of being and how I was lacking in my commitment, and started doing the work that would move me in a better direction. And frankly, I'm the best version of Michelle that I've ever been in 19 years, but it doesn't resonate
awesome.
With this frequency anymore.
Right, right. Well, that's a nice piece. My offering would be that's a good piece of avoidance of the work I'm suggesting you do. And I suggest, because one of your kicks with him was willingness, I suggest you step into willingness at this point and look at what work you still have to do around following that advice. Because your mind just came up with a whole story about, well, why that advice really isn't for you. And my offering is, if you're still giving it to what appears to be him, then it's still advice for you, and your mind's in resistance to it. You breathing? So I'm breathing with you.
You know, I just just feel like I there's not really a time that I'm not doing work. So it's just like
understood. But what I'm offering you is your mind has just told you about a specific piece of work that it's time for you to step into. And that's the second reason your mind has come up with for why there's no reason for you to do that. And I'll just offer you there is.
I guess it's just something that you think that I'm already not.
I'm not making any assumptions. I'm just listening to your words and feeding them back to you. Here's what I know. Until we step outside of our perception.
Michael, but you kept asking me to give him advice until the point like, okay, here's the advice. I think everyone should, if you're making a commitment, I think you should keep it. Yeah, I think that's a universal expectation. I cancel my goal for people to not be their word. I mean, I think that's just such a global thing. There's plenty of places where I'm out of integrity
for sure.
with my words.
Then go to work on it.
I mean, it's just a practice. Right, so that becomes a daily practice. I am getting better in every way and every day. Got it. Like, it's like you have
awesome.
To keep working on it.
Yep.
I would tell the clients, you're in therapy 1 hour a week. I'm in there because although it's not my session, the people that come in and they resonate my stuff.
Of course. Of course.
Hey, but listen, we can take a break off maybe because we've got another caller from the land of Ingham County on the radio show. I'd love to find out who this is. So, 517, who do we have?
Wait a minute. Slow down.
I thought I was co-host. I thought I had some rights here.
No.
Excuse me, 517, we'll wait. Michael's done. Oh, yes.
I'm going to offer you another piece of feedback, and I'm willing to stop anytime you want to stop. I'll stop now if you'd like.
No, you can.
My offering at this moment is, this is the third round of total resistance to looking at the piece of work that's on the table for you to do. And I just invite you to notice that. Go back and re-listen to the show, and this is the third time your mind's come up with a story about why that doesn't apply to you. Now, my offering is, and I'll say that I've realized that when I have advice, it always applies to me, and everywhere I've looked, that advice, my mind comes up with it because I'm an expert at giving advice, and I'm giving it to someone else because I'm in denial of that part of my own mind. And so I just invite you to notice that, and we can go on with our caller. There's another, I think, big piece of work that we could do around it if you're interested, but I'm willing to let go and follow your lead.
When I'm feeling more willing, because you're right, the more you're pushing me to or identifying these things, the more resistance I'm becoming. Because I just...
Yeah. And I'm not interested
in
pushing
right
you at all. What I'm interested... Yeah, I'm not interested in pushing you. What I'm interested in is supporting you and opening to the next level of your healing. Because after 5 years of working around this issue with Mark, there's still a lot of pain and loss for you to work through. And I'm here as a space to support that until you can think about Mark and you can be in such a space of connected aliveness, joy, sweetness, beauty, and blessing to him and all the world. That's the space I'd hold for you. And if you're not there, then I'm a space for supporting you working through it.
But I don't know that I feel that way about anybody or anything. I don't know that level that you just described is available.
My offering is that's human life. And if we don't have one yet, then that seems impossible. But ultimately, when we're living out of being, instead of perceptual constructs about ourselves and each other, that's what humans naturally do. It's just what happens. when we're living out of that self, you know, as Yeshua talked about it, in order for you, being, the one that can do that, to live, you, non-being, the one that can't imagine doing that, has to die. And forgiveness is how you weaken and dissolve that self that's made of pain, that's made of trauma, that continues the trauma game and holds it as necessary. Breathing with you and with me. I hold it true that we could be living in a world where 7.5 billion people wake up every morning as breath, as sweetness, as presence, as a blessing to everything and everyone that we lay our eyes on. That, for me, is what I've come to understand is not only possible, but ultimately necessary if we're going to function as human beings. Because that's what's natural to human life. You know, if we go and listen to Paul, Paul took a stab at that one when he said, love is. Actually, it's kind of funny because a lot of people have used that passage out of Romans, if I remember correctly, as their wedding vows. And if you listen to it and people talk about how beautiful it is, love is, love is, love is. But if you really listen to that whole passage, most of what he says in that passage is what love isn't, what he hasn't worked through yet. And my take is what he has not, the work he has not done that led him to say, why is it the things I would do? It's kind of like he's saying, I know what human life's capable of. Why can't I do it? I do what I hate, not what I want to do. It's because he hasn't worked through those things yet. So what if each and every one of us was capable of waking up in the morning and literally, totally, completely being that space? What if just to have your mind approach the thought of Mark, what resonated in you was that state of being where you functioned purely in the experience of love, purely in the experience of abundance, generosity, mercy, making allowances for others' weaknesses, gracious, civil, capable of compromise? What would it be like if you thought of him or anybody else, and that's what moved in you first? Instead of Paul, who says, love is this, and then he goes on to speak about himself doing what he hates to do. My offering is, that's exactly the space you can be in when you think of Mark. And I'm not saying that because I'm there 100% in former relationships that I've had, but I'll offer that. I still work on doing that.
I think we had a very successful divorce because I did that a lot, Michael.
Say it again. I missed a word there. A word cut out. What was it?
I said I had a very successful divorce because I did that during the whole like process. I continue to do that.
I acknowledge how much work you've done. I got it. I've watched you. I've participated. This isn't saying other than what your words and your advice to him are saying to yourself is here's your next piece of work to do. Not about your last piece of work that you did. In order for you to be at perfect peace, you know, there's a great test in the Course in Miracles, and God knows I haven't lived up to this one yet. But what the Course says is here's a measure for your work. When you think of anyone, are you at perfect peace? And then the really tough part of the test, the second half of it is, when they think of you, do they share your perfect peace?
Well,
like,
actually,
wow,
that's a
what
really
a
good
standard.
That is a good point because when you were talking about holding a space of love for Mark and being able to see through that Christ consciousness in seeing him, and then my mind goes to the part that even when I do that, like the way he distorts me, it doesn't even register. I mean, it really is sort of fascinating because the more healing I do, the more angry he seems to become. Let's put it that way.
So would you be interested in me sharing what I just heard?
Yeah.
I heard you say that you have a piece of advice for him. And the piece of advice is that he should stop distorting you and see you truly.
Yeah, that is definitely what you're trying to tell me to him.
So what happens when you follow that advice and stop distorting him and see him truly? Good breath. Go for it.
No, when I see him truly, I kind of am not interested. Not what you
want
to hear, I'm certain.
Oh, I don't have a want for anything to hear. I'm here to just be the space for whatever's there to move in you.
Yeah.
So notice the conflict that you hold. Oh, this relationship should be back. I still have the pogra. It's so strong. But then when you say, I see him truly, oh, I have no interest in him. You get that maybe there's a split mind there? And again, just pointing to the next subtle piece of work that's going to open. And you know what you may be dealing with here? Like if I remember correctly, there are other people in your life that you would have given that advice to. You wish they'd seen you truly. So it's probably an important piece of advice. And it's probably been going on for 100 generations in your bloodline.
So I want to get to our
good breath.
Caller.
Finish it.
But I wanted to tell you, I was on Saturday, I went down to Detroit area to meet with some new tenants. And so on the way down, I called my mom and I said, hey, I'm going to be in the area. Do you want to go to lunch? And we were going to go to lunch. But I really wanted to go down to Detroit and get some Polish food, but she couldn't. She really couldn't do the stairs that were involved with this restaurant. So I drove down to Detroit, got a bunch of Polish food, and then brought it back, you know, just loads of all the goodies from the old fashioned or old time, you know, neighborhood restaurants and bakeries. And so then I brought the food home and I was putting it on the counter, and she was so excited that she grabbed me. And she started kissing me all over, like, my head. And she's like, oh,
woman, thank you. This is the nicest thing anybody ever done. This is so, and she was just going on and on and on. And my brother looks at me, and I look at my brother, and we're like, what the hell? Like, did some alien take her over? Like, I think this is the first time that she has ever kissed me. Been at least 40 years. I don't remember because I don't think she kissed me on my wedding. I don't think she kissed me. Maybe when my babies were born. So 25 years.
So can I give you a piece of feedback?
What?
Here's what I heard you just say. My mother experienced being seen for who she really is and having her wishes fulfilled for the first time in a long time and was filled with appreciation for it.
Well, it's good that she healed whatever was in the way of letting that happen for her. I mean, I don't know, Michael. Like,
no. And it's probably, you know, it's probably a shared issue that's it's moving, you know, each of you getting to get the benefits of the work you've been doing.
Now, that, I mean, on that one, there's no way, you know, without having done this work starting 8 years ago, that that would have ever happened. Again, I guarantee. I'm certain of that. The interesting thing part is that I just felt so neutral about it. Not negative, not positive, just sort of like a neutral. And so I don't know if that's still more work because you, and I talked about this before, this idea of being able to generate affection. And I've thought about that a lot since you said that. Because I'm like, neutral's okay.
So while she experienced being seen for who she was and having her needs fulfilled, while there was a time when that was a need for you, that obviously isn't a need you have now. So it didn't open
right.
that space in you.
What do
so you
mean?
Might look at
Wait.
What is it that would open that space?
I don't know. All right. We
well,
really
it might be a good place to look.
So patient. So let's
go for it.
Okay, good. Hello.
Hi, is that my number? This is Angie.
Well, hey there, young lady. I guess it is. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Michelle.
How are you, young lady?
Hi, Mike. Hi. Oh, my gosh, this has been so good. Thank you so much. Thank you for your willingness, Michelle. And your steadiness.
Thank you for displaying such an amazing rendition of resistance.
That was when you said, okay,
smoke
my,
and mirrors.
517. I laughed. Oh, wow.
I'm out of here. Let's go to 517. No, it's beautiful. It's perfect.
It
and
was
what
awesome.
A gift
and,
to everybody listening and who will ever listen to this call. And I think it'll deliver more and more gifts, Michelle, as you listen to it, because I know you're willing to do your work, and, you know, here we are.
Oh, that isn't what you said in the past. Before, you said, in my own dining room, you told me I was the most resistant person you'd ever worked with.
That's true. That's true, yes. And people listen to this, and if you were your client, would you say, gee, the resistance is pretty high? But as you categorized yourself before, you're the most resistant, willing person you know. So, hey, you know, that's a good thing.
Exactly. Resistant and willing. So, Angie, what's new? Let's talk about you, please.
Well, I want to just
off
acknowledge.
Of this topic.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This, I put my hand out. Right in the beginning, because with the intention of sharing the fruits of what was uncovered through the course of the night since our show yesterday, where Michael reflected some things to me, and I got some really big ahas I hadn't seen before, and also just seeing, like, just in the course of listening to you share, Michelle, I got clear on a couple of things, like I canceled my goal to keep my promises, to be in integrity, for mom and dad to keep their commitments, for dad to stay home, it, like this piece about doing the work. So it's just started to come on the peripheral for me. And my dad worked a lot, like all the time. And sort of my experience as a little person was that, so I remember in the fourth grade, I did this paper on it. He was choosing a job that would take him out of the home, but it meant more money. So I, as a little girl, I framed that as, oh, he cares more about money than he does about me. So, and then like seeing how that's playing in with my, like finding balance in the idea of work and doing the work and just being willing to be present with myself and just be the space for myself. So that's, I think, what is coming up for me next. Yeah, goal for me to be done with my work. Goal for mom and dad to be done with their work so we can play. Kind of my goal for mom and dad to want to play with me. Kind of my goal to be together. Kind of my goal to get what I want. So all these things were just, I was just like jotting things down as I was listening to you. And so thank you so much. And what I dropped into, I'm going to just take a breath for a second.
Go for it. We're breathing with you.
So yesterday when we shared, when I shared with you, Michael, my experiences from the hospital and just everything that, that was shared and reflected for me through, since the end of the call, through the night, I've just been in process. And I know I still am in a deep process. I remember my grandma, my mom's mom, as my mom was dropping her body as she was dying or making her transition, my grandma, Angie, as her mom, said, you know, like, and from her pain, she was like, your mom is like my baby doll. I had her, you know, she had her when she got married to my grandpa really young, and they had her, and she was like her little doll. And I remember in the moment, my mind kind of went, that's interesting. And so this idea of expectation is what has been unfolding. And like the idealistic way of like trying to keep an image or an expectation and fitting that expectation. So as I started to really allow truth to Ruka to like reveal truth to me, I was shown a couple of experiences. One was, and I think they happened right around the same time. One was my baptism, and I was about, I believe, I was about 7 months old. When I was baptized, my parents had me baptized in a church, a congregational church, and then they didn't keep their commitment to continue going to the church or to, like, I wasn't raised really in church or with, I was raised with all the fear-based beliefs, but not, they weren't presented from, like, a church, a quote-unquote authority. But I think energetically, there was an imprint there, and I think my mom is the one that carried that, maybe like hidden pain that she didn't keep her commitment that she made when she had me baptized. And so when I hit my teenage years and like started to experience rebellious behavior or started to example rebellious behavior, you know, she blamed herself for not, oh, if we had just gone to church and if you had been raised, and that was her story. So seeing that, and then I was also experiencing a lot of pain, and it's still present in my left neck, head, and back. And I had my ears pierced right around this time, 7 months old. So, like, the idea of being this little doll and having this, you know, like, shaking right now, the shock and the trauma, and I'm not sure, but what I might have had my ears pierced, so I looked pretty at my, so bizarre.
It is, isn't it?
It's like, okay, well, we did that. And like, ouch.
So you're like abducting baby.
Yeah, there's a neutrality in my, I have this big broad smile on my face, like, okay, guys, like, we see that, right? Like, that is just weird. Let's not do that. So it's also like this whole idea of immunizing an infant. I've, you know, did some work around that, and the abuses from the pediatrician, and sexual distortions, and all that imprint. And just allowing light to touch all of that, restore true beingness.
Breathing with you, what's happening?
I'm aware of how yesterday when we got off the call, it's a memory now, it's not visceral, but the memory of like the sense, feeling of, I could feel it. It literally felt like I had hands wrapped around my throat. Yeah, it's just shedding, it's changing right now. And I feel a lot of appreciation for all of it. Like I did some work around, or just with those experiences in the hospital, and like what I was judging, I was not being real with myself. I wasn't being true. I'm reading the worksheet yesterday. I was like, I read it so differently this time. My denial. It's like, hold on. My denial causes. That's the cause of the stuff, my carbon-based membrane to fire, thus creating the interference that I was talking about yesterday. Like, and I've known, so it's me doing it, just like Paul, like with the scripture. I've had a couple of like Hollywood references that show up. One is like I keep getting references to the show, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form recommending this. It took me doing a whole lot of work to be able to want to see it, and then to actually sit and be able to navigate the content of the show Westworld. That has been present, and like just the idea of me waking myself up and turning myself on is really powerful. and very present. And then a couple other things are happening for me. Hollywood images of like navigating through, you know, chaos and traffic and all of these scenarios where, you know, like our hero, quote unquote, is unscathed. They're untouched, they're unharmed, and they're navigating the quote unquote wreckage. Did you say something?
No, just breathing with you.
Oh. And then as I'm aware of like the societal constructs that I've been privileged and like just breathing appreciation into these things that I would not have consciously chose to pull myself into, I don't think. And there's this just now, it's like the experience of like pulling a tablecloth off of a table and the setting, but the settings all remain the same. And I got that insight came when you shared, I hold it true. I hold it to be true that we could be living in a world where 7.5 billion people wake knowing and operating as pure love, knowing themselves as that beingness.
And let's put into that equation Yeshua's idea of critical mass, where he says a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. You don't have to go and do this whole body of work with 7.5 billion people. We just need to get enough people who will do that work to embody, to incarnate that energy so powerfully that it creates a field that literally impacts the whole globe and everyone on it.
I'm here for it, Michael and Michelle and everybody listening. I'm here for it.
Absolutely.
And it's really apparent to me, and that's part of what was coming through. And like, I could hear the distortions in my language yesterday in the pain. I am ready, willing, and able to be showing up. Like, I'm coming to you live from a coffee shop in my little town. And so I would like to have a conversation with you and Jeannie and Michelle. I don't know what you're doing. You're close if you're having support groups. It's time for me to.
Say it again, okay. Michelle. You were distorted a little bit.
Oh, we didn't resume when after COVID. We kind of disbanded in March of 20, and that hasn't been a conversation that's come up yet.
Well, I am here and posing the conversation. It's very apparent to me. There's no other pathway available to me in this moment. Like, I'm ready. So,
you know, Zoom is a powerful way to do the work now. I mean, we're noticing, like, we've done a couple of intensives. We just did a still point mind shifter and still point breathing workshop this weekend. It was interesting. I mean, I've been breathing people for 4 decades. I've been doing workshops when I was in South Florida. We're actually looking at doing this once again via Zoom. In South Florida, I used to do a still point breathing workshop, mind shifters and still point breathing, 1 weekend a month. That was just standard. And I've never in 40 years of working with people had everybody in the group breathing reach a still point simultaneously. Right. And on Saturday,
that's
everybody
impressive.
In the still
yeah.
point workshop went to still point. And it was just so, it was so profound and so powerful that I actually left the workshop and turned it over to Jeannie because I needed to go and breathe. And
uh-huh,
that's what I did.
Uh-huh.
I went and did still point while Jeannie was breathing the group.
I feel
level.
It.
So,
and I want to participate in that next workshop. I was taking Olivia out to Boston. I moved her into university, or I would have been there for that.
Cool.
So,
well, it looks like I think Jeannie and I have been looking at the calendar. I think it's going to be the first or second week, it's the 5th or the 14th, if I remember correctly, of October. And we just decided yesterday that that's where we're going to go with the next breath workshop.
Okay.
Look at my calendar to see. I think maybe it's the weekend of the 9th of October. This is going to be our next one. But I'll keep you posted on it. In any event, you know, maybe it's time for the Lansing crew to come back together and do a support group via Zoom.
Well, Angie, you're going to have to see. I'm relocating to Mexico in September for a couple months again.
Oh, cool.
Well, Zoom will work beautifully then. Wow, congratulations. It's exciting.
Yeah, lots of good things happen when you do the work, I think.
That's the idea.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. And there are other Zoom support groups that anyone in the country or the globe can join. You know, Susan Bingham and her husband Tim are doing one every week. They've been doing it for months now. I'm not sure what other support groups are going, but there is a listing on the website. So you can always join groups and or get one started in locally.
Yeah, I know. I'm supposed to be sharing the wealth.
Yay. Well, we're down to the last minute or so. Michelle, any other thoughts for you at this moment?
I'll check in soon.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, everybody, we hold space for each one to create the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's something we are each capable of. The world needs it. Let's give it to them. And blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.